Back in January of this year, on the same day that the protesters barged into this sanctuary and began yelling profanities and harassing the community gathering here, you went about the business of being church. After singing out on the sidewalks in response to the protest, you gathered for worship. And after worship, you gathered for the quarterly business meeting and voted to become a sanctuary church. I say you because this was a month before we arrived, but in the days that we've spent together since, many of you have told us that the moment you voted to become a sanctuary church was one of your proudest moments as a church. In the months that have followed, we've been trying to learn and discern and prepare and become a sanctuary church. These last 2 weeks, we've been considering what it means to expand sanctuary, to ground our understanding of sanctuary in theological language, to root our practice of sanctuary in dialogue with our sacred text. Pastor Elijah laid the foundation for this series with a look at the creation narrative in Genesis, examining the poems and stories that tell us who we are. And last week, Pastor Maria proclaimed a vision of what it means to be an accompanying church, a church where we know one another so well that issues are no longer issues because they have faces and names of people that we love upon them. A church where we can't help but walk with one another. And today we turn to the next pillar of expanding sanctuary. Know your rights. We're rolling up our sleeves on this one in multiple fronts. We've had a bilingual training, and we've ordered the Know Your Rights cards that you can carry in your wallets. Be sure to get yours at the welcome table at coffee hour today. And even more inspiring, Calvary members like John, Salima, Lou, and Rachel, and others have worked tirelessly in Rockville, their own community, to make sure that city officials cannot request or demand the immigration status of any person unless such a request is required by law. If you need some inspiration, pull up the video and watch the testimony of fellow Calvary members. And today, as we place knowing your rights in conversation with the lectionary text, the dialogue is difficult and awkward because these are prickly passages, but we press in nonetheless. As a white woman in the United States whose name comes from Sarah, I feel compelled to wrestle with her a bit. I find compassion for her and anger with her all at the same time. We read a portion of her story last week. You see, Sarah knew what it meant to be oppressed. She was an immigrant without any rights as a citizen. She was a woman who in the ancient Near Eastern context was seen as property. She was pawned off on not one but two occasions as Abraham's sister, meaning she was sold as property to two different kings. In other words, she was pimped out by her husband under the guise of safety. And if that wasn't enough, she was barren, which was understood to mean that she was despised by God, because God was the one who had closed her womb. As a result, she was cut off from the possibilities of providing a male heir, her only shot at greater worth and value in her world. When her husband Abraham tells her about the covenant that God has made with him to make him the father of many nations, she decides she has to take matters into her own hands. Sarah believes the promises that God made with Abraham, but she has long given up on the possibility that she might be able to give Abraham children. Sarah tells her husband to have a son with their slave, Hagar. Yes, we should note that it must be a son. A daughter in this context would just be more property. And Sarah almost instantly regrets her decision, and she treats Hagar harshly. This is the place in the story where I wish it didn't sound so familiar. I wish I couldn't think of any other examples of how women have been awful to other women, especially white women to women of color. The abuse is so horrible that Hagar flees to the desert while she is pregnant with Ishmael. And while she's there trying to escape the cruelty and oppression of Sarah, we come across the first annunciation scene in the whole Bible. God's messenger comes to Hagar, promising to make a great nation of her descendants, but also telling her to return home of all things. How beautiful that Hagar is the first to receive a messenger of God. How disturbing that the messenger of God tells her to go back into her suffering. Some years later, Sarah finally conceives, gives birth to Isaac, and Abraham throws a big festival when he is weaned. And during the celebration, Sarah looks over to Hagar's son Ishmael, and she sees him laughing. She interprets that as a threat to her own son and his inheritance, and she tells Abraham to send Hagar and the boy away. The truth of the matter is that in her context, Sarah exercises one of the only rights that she has to maintain her status as principal wife, using what little power she has to send Hagar away, the one who has virtually no rights. So as we look at what this story might say about knowing our rights, we realize just how flawed this whole project is. And we're just now getting to today's story. As Hagar finds herself out of water in the desert with her son, we quickly see that any legal rights that Hagar had have failed her. Abraham was a rich man, and he banishes Hagar with only one day's provisions. He sends her away to die. If these are Hagar's rights, they are horrendous. She's already been bought as a slave, abused, and then cast aside when she's no longer of use. I don't mean to suggest that legal rights don't matter, but I do mean to say that the most profoundly oppressed among us are often crushed under the so-called rights of others or the rule of law, the rights that come only after decades and centuries of oppression. That is not how God intends it. Sure, we could argue that this was thousands of years ago. Rights for children and people of color and queer people have come a long way. And we would have a point, but we would be missing the point, too. You see, we began this series with the creation narrative. As God looks upon what's created each day, the light and the waters, the sun and the earth, the creature and all the living things upon the earth, each day we hear the ringing, and God saw that it was good, and God saw that it was good, and God saw that it was good. And when we arrive at the creation of humanity, God says to us, "Let us make them in our own image." And at the end of this day, God says that it was very good, supremely good, as the Common English Bible calls it. We make so much of the idea of original sin and miss the reality that there is a profound, expansive, inclusive, original blessing, and it doesn't just stop with humanity. It extends to the whole of creation. We are created in the image of God. We bear the divine imprint. We are all God's beloved. Not one is excluded from this story. These are our fundamental human rights. These are our basic human dignities. Hagar inherently knew her rights, and she cried out to God. And God heard the cries of the boy and says to Hagar, "Do not be afraid. God has heard the boy's cries. Get up and take the boy by the hand, because I will make of him a great nation." And God shows her the well that is nearby for them to drink and be renewed. Jesus takes up similar themes with his disciples in today's gospel lesson. He's sending them out two by two to practice discipleship. And before they go, he teaches them about what they will encounter. We heard last week about the harassment that they can expect to face. And in today's continuation of the story, Jesus tells the disciples the same thing that God tells Hagar. Do not be afraid of those people. Only fear God, who can destroy both body and soul. And then we find these profoundly intimate images of how God cares for her children. Are not two sparrows sold for a small coin? But not one of them will fall to the ground without God knowing it already. Everyone hearing these words would know that sparrows are worth almost nothing. They certainly have no legal rights. But the tenderness for which God cares for them is vast. Jesus continues, "Even the hairs of your head are all counted. Do not be afraid. You are worth more than many sparrows." If we keep following Jesus around, we realize that he is constantly going to ones who have been devalued or oppressed by the world. Every time a line is drawn to exclude and oppress, Jesus rewrites and includes, declaring, "These are my beloved. These are my very own being. You shun them, you shun me." You see, as a sanctuary church, we can never settle for the rights granted or not granted by a nation or a people, because over and over in our holy book, we see a vision for the kingdom that God is building. A kingdom where all of humanity is bestowed with divine worth, and all of humanity has inherent rights and dignities. There's no place on this planet where a legal system is granting rights that look like God's kingdom, and so we as a church must always be pressing beyond, rewriting and including as we seek to follow Jesus in the world. For starters, we'll be the kind of church that makes sure that people know how to navigate a legal system that isn't honoring their divine worth. But we won't stop there. We'll never let the laws of a nation define what a person is worth, for we know it will always fall short of the divine worth bestowed upon every one of us. To do this, we have to let our own divine worth seep deep into our bones, our minds, our hearts, our muscles, lest we become like Sarah, where the oppressed become the oppressor once again. In a few moments, we'll sing about the house that we long to build together. A house where healing can take place. A house where we recognize that the outcast and the stranger bear the image of God's face. Let us bring to an end to fear and danger. Yes, Lord, yes. Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done. Amen.